Hi, everybody. This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here with Marianne Boom Boom Maisano, star of stage, screen, audio, video, burlesque, I think a few other things. And she's also the writer and star of Agita and the creator of The Italian Chicks. So welcome, Marianne. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Bob. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So I guess we could still say Italian Chicks, right? I know we can't say Dixie Chicks anymore, but I guess Italian Chicks are okay?
Yeah, Italian Chicks are fine. No problem over here.
My Aunt Mary used to call my cousins in the late 60s, early 70s, trampolines.
Trampolines? That's cute.
She was the comedian in the family. She was great fun and always the life of the party. Your dad, and I'm not sure if your mom, I don't remember, but your dad was, he was from Italy, right? And how about your mom?
My mom is from Naples, but she was born in Naples and brought here when she was very young with the family. So she was already in the United States before my father got here.
And when did your father come?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I mean, he had to get here when he was about, I want to say like 18 years old, because he left, he was born in Reggio Calabria in Bagnata. And he left there and he came here and he got a job as a mason worker, because that's what they did. Mason, okay? And then from there, he met my mom. He met my mom when she was 16 years old and they got married when she was 16. And then he got drafted into the American Army. She was pregnant, and he went to war back to Europe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's something. Yeah, yeah. So she was alone. Now, she was here by herself?
She had her siblings, but her dad passed by then, and her mom passed during childbirth, so she wasn't even around. So she was alone, and every day, it's so funny you have the image of the bridge behind you, and that was my whole life growing up. And every day, she would take my brother's, because he was the oldest, and, you know, the prodigal son, and she would reel him across the bridge and walk to Mother Caprini Church. And she said that's where all the Italian women would go to the church to light candles and say novena so that their men would come back from the war.
She used to walk over the bridge from New Jersey to New York.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's not a short walk.
It's not really, you know, when you think about it. But, you know, maybe back in the day, you know, it wasn't as treacherous.
Probably not. I remember coming over that bridge one time. I had a little MGB, and I was coming from Jersey, and I got off the bridge, and there's this long, curving, winding turn that went when you went down into Manhattan, and I guess the speed limit was 30 or 35, and I went, ha, ha, ha. And I'm going down at about 65, and right at the bottom, there were these two big Irish policemen. They came up, one walks over to the car, and he was like 3 feet over the top of the car.
Oh, God. Oh, God. And that's when you realize you're wearing in Parsitano. Okay.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. So you grew up in Fort Lee. Were there a lot of Italians there when you were there?
It was predominantly Italian American in Fort Lee. At the end of the street was, on one side was the street that we were on, which was Hudson Street, was the entrance to the bridge, and on the other side was Main Street. So at the end of the street was everybody, we all knew each other on that block. I mean, either somebody was related or this or that, all my mother's friends. And there was this big Italian-American like grocery store. So everybody would go there to get all of their supplies, whether it was lupini beans and everything was in barrels. And so it was like a real old-fashioned kind of thing. Yeah. And then it changed.
Well, every place changed. You know, we grew up in Corona. It was the same thing. It's all gone now. There's a few little places here and there, but not like it used to be. And I'll tell you a funny story. When we, because my wife grew up in Manhattan, I grew up in Queens, and we moved to Jersey in '86. And my next door neighbor said, "You must love Italian hot dogs." And I was like, "What's an Italian hot dog?" He says, "You're Italian. You don't know what an Italian hot dog is." I said, "I never heard of an Italian. Never heard. I didn't know it was a Jersey thing."
Yeah, Jersey thing.
We didn't have Italian hot dogs in Queens. So, for people listening, what's an Italian hot dog?
Tell them, Bob.
It's a deep fried hot dog.
That's right.
With potatoes, I think peppers and onions. And it's the strangest. It's the strangest thing.
It was the best though, because my mom would do that. She would get the peppers, the onions, fry it up, and then she'd get the hot dogs and slice them into $0.50, and mix it all together, jambolta, tutte jambolta, and put it in a hunk of Italian bread. I mean, what's better than that?
No, nothing. I mean, it's very, very good. That was the one thing, and the other thing that I never knew about was pork roll and cheese and egg.
That was another
revelation.
Pork roll, right?
And one of the best things ever, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So your dad, he was a Mason for a while, and then he came back. And is that when he got the cab? Is that when he started business?
Started the first cab business in Fort Lee. And interestingly enough, the second cab business was my father's cousin, Babe Maizano. So they had Babe's Taxi and they had Joe's Taxi. Now, the difference between the two, and I didn't learn this until about 8 years ago when I was having dinner in a restaurant, and these lovely women all came over to me and we were talking about Fort Lee. And when a friend of mine mentioned about my dad and Joe's Taxi, they went, "Oh my God." Everybody knew my father and my mother. They were like a staple. And it was interesting because they said, "We always used your father's company instead of Babe's, because we knew with your father, we were going to get your father, your brother, or your cousins. With Babe's, we were going to get carnival people that were coming into town. And we didn't want to put our kids in a car with carny people." And then this woman told me the sweetest story, because you learn things, you know, as you grow up, you learn things that soften you more about what your childhood was like. And it gets you to really settle in and understand it better, you know? And she said, and then in the morning, I'd give my kids money and say, "Okay, now when Joe picks you up, when he drops you off, you give him this money." And they, "All right." And she said, you know, when they get home from school, they take their clothes off and I go through their clothes and empty their pockets. And they had, you know, they still had some money. And I was saying, I called them in. I'm like, "What the hell? Didn't you give Joe any of the money?" And they said, "Yeah, but Joe said he only charges kids $1. So, I mean, it was very sweet to hear that, you know. So he started that company, and the man couldn't read or write English. Everything was phonetics. Mm. And then my mom stayed at home and had the taxi phone. So she was there, you know, taking all the messages for the calls. We didn't have CB radios or cell phones. And it was like madhouse because the phones were ringing. And then he got a brilliant idea. I thought it was quite brilliant. He went to the lumberyard and he got an old telephone pole and he plowed it into the front of the ground in the house. And he put a huge spotlight on top and he ran a wire through the yard into the house. And anytime the phone rang, my mom would write down the call because he was parked right around the corner at the taxi stand by the bridge. So he could see that spotlight from where he was sitting. So anytime my mom got a call and he wasn't there, she'd write it down, plug the spotlight in, and then he'd come home and get the call.
That's great. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I know you tell that story in Ajita. When I was watching it, there was like just a couple of things that hit home to me, even though, you know, we grew up, you know, I don't know, 40, 50 miles apart or something like that. Yeah. There were some very interesting things. And for everybody listening, Marianne's an accomplished guitarist and singer and songwriter. And the first thing when you were talking, you mentioned House Is Out is the first song that you learned. House of the Rising Sun.
Yeah.
And that hit home with me because my band was House Is Out. And we got that name because the drummer didn't like the song, hated the song, never wanted to play the song, and we made him end every gig with House of the Rising Sun. But you played it ad nauseum for the family, yeah?
Yes. My mom was amazing. She was like, she was the best fan, honestly. I mean, I could do no wrong. And I come home from from school because I won this guitar down the shore. And I'd come home from school, go right to my room, and I'd play these, you know, continue to play. And then I finally learned how to play House of the Rising Sun, and I played it every friggin' day. And my mom never once came in and said, "Marion, can you please learn another song?" She always said, "Oh, babe, that was beautiful." But, you know, to your point, Danny Aiello, who was a very dear friend of mine and an amazing mentor who's passed, and he had supported me in the show for as an endorser as well for 12 years. But Danny's manager, who I still keep in touch with today, it's so funny because he saw Ajita and he called me up and he was, it moved me so much because like Danny was such a giving person as an actor. Like, you know, like most of these people you meet, they're all, I don't know, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
I don't have to get in. You know what I'm talking about. And, but Danny was very giving and like I'd go in the city and watch him rehearse something. And then we'd all three of us would go walk to get some dinner, and on the street, people would stop him. And he'd be like, "Oh, you know, Danny, would you sign this? Need sign?" And then he made you feel so special. And I was like in the middle of him and his manager. And this one guy is going, he's signing the thing. And he goes, "Well, wait a minute. This girl here, you better get her autograph because she is a quadruple threat." And it just made you feel like, you know, you're like, "Oh my God," you know? And when Louis watched it, because Danny, of course, never got to see it. But I did throw a reference in there about Danny. Well, first of all, I used the song, that one of my songs that I recorded, and it was nominated for a Grammy. But also, I used his name by calling the woman Mrs. Aiello in one of my scenes.
Oh, I didn't catch
that. At the bank. At the bank.
Oh, yeah, I didn't catch that.
"Mrs. Aiello, how are you?" You know? So I did that to pay homage a little bit to Danny, you know? And when Louis called me, he was just, I mean, I was in tears because he was like, "Mayor," he goes, "I swear to God, I stopped the film and I looked up at the heavens and I said, Danny, how proud are you of this girl?" You know, because it was a big accomplishment to write that for me. And it was daunting and it was cathartic. And to rehearse that every day and live through all the things that were painful were not easy. And the funny thing about House of the Rising Sun, everybody that I spoke to resonates with this film in some way, shape, or form, whatever it is, whether it's musically, whether it's the family, whether it's the infidelity, all of it. It just comes together. And he said, years ago, when I started out as a drummer in a band, rock and roll. And he said, they wanted to play House of the Rising Sun. And he said, but nobody's voice was deep enough except for me. He said, so that was the first song I played on the drums in my band. And I was like, what? You know, it's just interesting when you get, same with you, you know?
Well, yeah, and I sang it. And then we got Rosa to sing with us. And Rosa came to, she didn't know she was auditioning. And then we said, "You have the job." And she said, "I just came for fun." "No, you're not here for fun. You're here to be in the band."
Yeah.
And so I turned it over to her because she could sing it much better than I did. But tell the funny stuff. I want you to tell, because I know you played in rock bands and you played in wedding bands. So I want you to tell the wedding band story about, because I have a story for you after you tell your story.
Well, yeah. So in the wedding bands, it was kind of horrible. Listen. But you made a lot. You made way more money than you did in any bar. But so that's why you did them. So, you know, the wedding band, you'd go and then the cocktail hour was the worst because nobody believed me. But people didn't hear anything you sang because they were too busy eating and talking and this and that. And I used to say to the guys in the band, they don't listen to what we're saying because they did. And nobody believed me. So the band, the guy who was, you know, calling out the tunes, he goes to me, "Okay," calls out the tune. So we start doing this bossa nova, real sexy and soft, you know. And I figured I would, you know, screw them up a little bit. And I changed the words to the song, right? So I'm singing, "She was tall, she was tan, she was hot. She was tall, she was tan, she was hot. And she walked on down from the Isle of Ipanema. With a big straw hat and a dildo named Sam." Well, the guys were hysterical. And and everybody in the audience is fine. Like, nothing was wrong in Ipanema. You know, they just kept eating the shrimp.
So my friend Nick, who taught me, he's a great guitar player and a great singer. And my third try at the guitar, he finally got me playing some songs, and he had me gig with him a couple of times and said, "Don't sweat it. I'm here. Don't worry about it." But he was in a rock band in college, and he also, same thing with the money, you know, he was in a wedding band. And he said, boring, the same songs over and over again. He had to sing the same songs over and over again. So he says, one time they're at this, a wedding. And for the chorus, he starts singing, "My cock and my balls, my cock and my balls." And he said, everybody's dancing, everybody's having a good time. He says, we finished the song. And he says, this little old gray-haired lady comes running up to the bandstand. And I'm like, oh, crap, we're going to get it now.
Yeah.
And she says, "I love that song."
So, you gotta love when stuff like that happens, because you're like, "What?" You know?
Yeah, didn't hear a word. Like I said, didn't hear a word.
Exactly. That is so funny.
But his advice, and you probably came up with the same thing, was, I'm going to tell you two things. One, the first thing is, never stop. Don't stop playing. Just keep playing.
That's right.
And the second thing is, he says, just remember, everybody out there in the audience wants to be where you are.
That's true. That's true. And I remember, this is not in anything you've heard. So it was a while back. It was a wedding band, but it was in, I'm not going to say where it was. It was in Queens, and it was a big Goomba joint. You know what I mean? Like one of those kind of joints.
Yeah.
And we were in there, and I was singing, and there was a table all the way in the back in the corner. Typical, right against the wall, right? And they were all men at this one table. It was all men, but they had no necks. Do you know what I mean? They were just like, it was just like shoulders and head. You know what I mean? No freaking neck, right? And this one guy, the one guy walked real slow, like he was in slow motion. And he comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, you know how to sing Malavemana?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "All right, he wants you to sing Malavemana. You sing the song for him." I said, "Sure." So now I'm scared shit. I better remember this song, right? So I sing the song Malafemina. After we take a break, the big guy, slow motion guy, walks over to me and goes, come in, Venica. And he grabs me by the hand. He walks me, going back to that table against the wall with all the guys. And there's the one guy in the corner, and he leans over to me and he grabs my hand. I knew something was in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
There, like, want to look. And he goes, "I want to thank you very much for what you did. It's beautiful, son. Beautiful. Get better." And I was like, "Oh, thank you so much." And I walked away and I waited till no one can see me. And he gave me $500.
Get out.
Back in the day, I was like a millionaire.
Yeah, sure.
$500 to sing that song. I was like, what else does he want me to do? Okay.
Yeah, if I could get $500 for singing a song, I mean.
All right, damn. I can wash his car. All right. Oh, craziness.
Oh, that's some story. So now the other thing that you talked about, your dad had a cab company. He had a checker, right? You mentioned that. Now, my dad had a checker. He wasn't a cab driver. My dad was a photographer for the Daily News.
Oh, cool.
And for, I guess, I don't know, 8-10 years, they had cars, company cars. And I think the reason that they used the checkers is because it had that big back seat.
Yeah, it was like you could lay.
You could lift there.
Yeah.
And I think they could put the camera bag, because back then they had the big camera, the Speed Graphics and flash bulbs and all of that kind of stuff. But I remember riding in the back of that car, and I could barely see my father in the front.
Right.
And when he stopped, when he stopped short, you weren't flying across the back of the thing. And now, so you said you got a car. Your first car was a?
My first car was a checker cab. But I painted it green. So it looked like an army tank. Okay.
I bet.
And then, remember, the band that I was in, we had those Shure speakers for PA system.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like the size of a human person. They were like 5 feet tall, and they were like this wide. And we had two of these speakers. It was perfect because we'd slide them right in the back of the checker, and then we put all the other shit on top of it.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the best thing. I mean, and that car was like, I can't tell you could do anything to that car, and it was like a damn tank.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Well, yeah, you had those. Well, you had those. First of all, you had those big bumpers, and even you know, the back seat was big. The trunk was huge.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, you could drive through anything. You could hit any pothole. Nothing destroyed those.
Right.
Nothing destroyed them.
And I was so different than everybody else because for me, I was more concerned about having room for my equipment and this and that. And all my other girlfriends from school, they were like, you know, oh, my dad got me a red Pinto, you know, and I'd be like, really, what could you put in there?
So you were the, besides being the guitar player and the singer, you were also the chauffeur, I guess.
Yeah, I was.
And so where did you play? Did you play, you know, you mentioned Queens, but did you play mostly in Jersey or?
We played with the bands. Yeah, it was mostly Jersey. Once in a while, we do like, we go down to Baltimore and play like, you know, in the summer, like, you know, summer little
tiki festivals. Yeah.
Festivals like that. But yeah, we basically did that. And it was interesting. It was just, you know, it was an interesting time because you learned so much more with a band, you know, like, because you each time you got together or you rehearsed about something, somebody did something a different way. And it wasn't necessarily a way that you would like look up a specific chord and say, oh, like for example, Harvest Moon, right? Neil Young. He plays, instead of playing a D chord up here where you typically would an open D, he plays it down by like the 11th fret.
Uh-huh.
And it's a beautiful melodic sound that comes out of it instead of just playing that D chord. So when you were in a band, you learned so much more because everybody was just, I don't know, inventing their own little style of something. And you were like, wow, how'd you do that? That sounded really cool.
Yeah. And you know, that's like, you know, my friend Nick, he's a great guitar player. And Brian is just awesome. But now, I know you've written a couple of songs. The first song I wrote was to my wife. The second song I wrote was Double Bagging Baby. So you know the old saying, she needs two bags?
Oh, yeah, two bags over her head? Yeah. She's two bags. She's a two bagger. I used to say, she's a two blocker. Two blocks. Forget about a bag.
And, you know, we play that song. And you know, like I said, nobody's listening. Every once in a while, some girl would come up and say, that's a horrible song. How could you sing that song? It's a joke. It's fun. It's just relax.
Right. Well, remember now, I'm not dating myself because I'm the youngest of four. And my sisters were like, there was a 10-year difference between my one sister and so on. And my sisters always had music going on. So I was like, you know, jumping around with them. They were trying to be, you know, the Shangri-Las and I was with them, you know, like, da, da, da. And this one song that was, I never forget the song. And I said, dear God, if this song ever came out today, it never would have worked. I don't know who did it, but it was called, If You Want to Be Happy for the Rest of Your Life.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty woman, you're a wife, right? So from my personal point of view, get an ugly girl to marry you. Yeah. That's going to go far today, okay?
Yeah, well, that's the way my song was. Yeah. So now, have you been to Italy? Have you ever gone to Italy?
No, that is
no. Marianne, you have to go.
I know.
Drop everything and go. Just go.
Listen, I am every sense of the word a struggling artist. So everything I do goes right back into my craft. So it's just been very difficult for me to manage that, but I'm going to get there because my father's house is still standing.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's we had gone once 25 years ago, and it was great. We went to Rome, we went to Sorrento. My son was a baby; we couldn't do too much. I mean, this time we went back to some of the towns, and it's just, I mean, the people, the food. I mean, the food. Forget the food,
right?
But the people are just so nice and welcoming. And as soon as they know that you're from there, it's like a whole new world opens up.
Right,
you know,
right.
And yeah, you really have to get there. Letizia is on, so she, you know, you need to connect with her.
It's so funny because I was just going to say, I can't believe you mentioned her name. When I go there, I'm calling my friend Letizia, who's in Rome, and she and I are going to sit down at a cafe and have some wine and cheese. That's what we're going to end bread, okay? And then she's going to take me to Calabria.
Well, that's what, you know, that's what she did with us. We went to Molise, and we went to Calabria, and we went to Campania. Of course, my father's family's from Naples, and we just had an amazing time. And I've told this story before, but I'm going to bore everybody again. The most amazing part of the whole trip was she connected with one of my fourth cousins from my father's mother's family, and she set up the whole thing in Calabria and everything like that. But through her, I found out, actually, Nicholas saw it, and he contacted me, and he's my father's half-first cousin. My grandfather was 60 when he married married his second wife. She was 30. She was the same age as my grandmother. And he had another family. And Nicholas is actually younger than I am, but he's my father's first cousin. And 2 months before we go, we got to meet him and talk to him, and he met us there. And he said, "You're going to meet me at the cemetery, and then I'm going to take you to the apartment in Torre del Greco." Well, my grandmother's two nieces in their 90s, still alive. I never knew these people existed. And we get there, and it's like old homework, like they knew us forever. And they start pulling out pictures, and they take out my parents' wedding photo.
Wow.
Is that sick?
Wow.
Crazy, right? Yeah. And not only that, they knew gossip from the 1960s. They're telling me gossip.
That's what they love. Signore tutti chiacchierone, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. So now I want to ask you a little bit about the Italian chicks. Now, where do you find these chicks? Do you hang around like pizzerias, bakery stores? Do they come out? And how do you find
them? That's so funny that you said that. Actually, I usually do. The first time I did it, I did a casting call, and I found a bunch of people. And I had that same kind of group for a number of years. And then I really thought it was best for the show and longevity to really do a rotating cast and get a bunch of Italian chicks. So that this way, it's not always the same group of people. It's a change up. And I think it's good for me, and I think it's good for the audience as well. So I'm always the headliner. And then there are always other women that come into it. But we've been going strong. I mean, I started this, I think it was in 2009, and we premiered it at the Laugh Factory in New York City, which is no longer there. And no one knew about us. Now, with all my skills from banking and branding and sales and all this other shit, you know, I did a bang-up job getting all this information out there about the Italian chicks, right? And we wound up selling out that room that people were turned away. I had friends of mine that couldn't get in. So it was pretty amazing. It was remarkable. And then after that, I thought, wow, this is great. Now, you know, we can call anybody. But here's what I learned. And I'm not, you know, look, I'm not a huge feminist, believe me. But one thing I do believe in is that, you know, the men still try to rule the world, especially in the entertainment comedy field. Okay. And I would call comedy clubs, and the first thing I'd hear is some dingbat guy go to me, "No, we don't do chick flicks." And then I realized, you know what? If you look at a poster on any comedy club, here's what you're going to see. You're going to see three people. You're going to see a woman opening the show, and then a man and a man. Or you'll see a man, a girl, and a man, like a friggin' CYO dance, okay? That's what you're going to see. You're never going to see four women at the same time on one stage in a comedy club. Because you know what? It's all about turnaround. Get them in, get them out for the next show. Get them in. And I have almost a two-hour comedy casino-style show. There's music. There's singing. There's, you know, it's just totally different. I mean, yes, everybody gets up individually and does their comedy bit and tells their story, which is still, you know, to me, I call it like it takes you back to a time and place when life was simpler, because we all have a story about what our Italian life meant to us and how it shaped us. But everybody's is different. Even though we have similarities, it's still different. So everybody tells their story, and then we all get together, and I do something. When I finish my comedy act, I kind of wind it down, and I start talking about Sunday dinner, and which is what we're having today, right?
Yeah.
And Sunday dinner, how important that was to us, and that it really kind of shaped and molded who we are today from our morals and our values, and especially in my house, because it was so eclectic, because my father brought over all his family from the other side. So everybody came over to our house on Sunday, and I had all my uncles and my tias and all my cousins, and we would sit there, and there was no Discovery Channel, but we would sit there like this, because my uncle would be talking about the old country and the ancient gnarled olive trees and the opera. You know what I mean? Like, and Michelangelo. And we'd be just like, wow, that's where we come from? So it was like this whole thing. And then the smells that you heard and the music was so eclectic. We would wake up on a Sunday and we would hear everything from Jimmy Roselli to Pagliacci to Calabutti. Mm-hmm. That went on and on. I mean, it was like, so you would just, I don't know. And I kind of take the audience down from a high to a place of, I'd like to do something a little more traditional for you now and do a song that always reminds me of Sunday dinner, to all the smells and all the sounds and all the voices that we don't hear anymore. And then I sing Al Di Là. And I mean, it makes people cry. And that's what I love, because I'm impacting them on a different emotional level. You know what I mean? It's still visceral, but it's not comedy. It's still touching them emotionally. And then I bring out the rest of the Italian chicks. And then we do these really silly, dirty song parodies that are so much fun that it takes them from here to here. And it's great, you know? I mean, at the end of the show, it's like a wedding. We have a progression line for people coming up to kiss us before they leave, because they all have to touch you and tell you what they thought. And one night this woman was crying, and I said to one of my partners, I go, Gina, I don't know, maybe this isn't good. This lady's crying. What do you think? So the woman comes up and she says, I just want to thank you. I heard words tonight that I haven't heard since my mother and father were alive. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, to your point, that was so important. And that's the sad thing about the generations now. They don't have that.
They have brunch.
Yeah. Right. Let me have a mimosa. And, we had wine with water and crap like that. But, you know, it was just something that you'd look forward to. And especially in, you know, my mom's family, my grandmother's birthday was in August. Mother's Day was in May. Her birthday was in August. And, you know, you would look forward to that, especially her birthday, because the weather was usually much nicer, seeing all your cousins, because there'd be 100, you know, family members in one backyard.
Right.
You know, my mother had 9 brothers and sisters. There were 23 cousins. They were, you know, second cousins and all of that. And we just all pack in there. And nothing made my grandmother more happy than be surrounded by her grandchildren.
Exactly.
She didn't care about anything else. That was her life.
My mom too.
Yeah, yeah. The more the better. And you know, her face would just light up, and you know, my aunts would start singing Italian songs and everything like that. And you know, and you mentioned the smells and everything like that. I was I had this my last job. I had this I guess Khadija's probably 30 years younger than me, black girl from Chicago, and we were just sympathetic. I mean, we just, as soon as she started working for me, she was like my daughter, right? And we just got along so well together. And we thought the same way and everything like that. And we were in Little Italy one day. I forget where we went, but we were walking through Little Italy, and there was a little Italian bakery. And I said, come with me. You have to come in here. She says, well, why? I said, come in here. And it was like one of those little bakeries. It was about this wide, you know. And you walk in, and there's a counter, and we walk in, and she looks at me, and I said, this is what it smelled like when I was growing up. And she said, really? I said, this is what it smelled like when I was growing up.
It's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the cookies, the bread, the cake. I mean, it was just, and it was like a little compact place, so it really resonated, you know?
Right, right.
And, you know, now you go to Publix or you go to ShopRite and, you know, buy your Italian cookies or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Because all those places are gone. Well, you know, if any of the chicks ever want to do something like this, let me know, because I'd love to talk to them. I'm sure you got a lot of people, because all the Italian guys probably figured, Italian chicks, let me go.
Yeah, let me go. Yeah, hey, I might get a little lucky over there. I always say, you know, don't think this is a chick flick, because you might meet your next husband there. You know what I mean?
That's a frightening thought.
Yeah.
Not that. No, we're all Italian guys. We're all so special. You could just ask my wife how special we are.
Please.
She'll tell you. My wife is Sicilian and Puerto Rican, so.
Oh, famiglia. Es per rosante. Oh, okay.
No, she's wonderful. She's very sweet. And she makes me say that, so. But seriously, I'd love to, you know, if the groupies want to get together one time, I think we'd have a lot of fun. So now are you booked any place with the chicks
I booked it late, starting in April, because right now I'm working on a lot of promotions for the films and all kinds of stuff like that. So I'm kind of like, I don't want to lose my focus with one and then overdo the other. So we're going to be in Boston in, April, and then we're going to be in Hammonton, New Jersey, which I believe is the biggest Italian-American population in New Jersey.
I think you might be right. Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah.
And then we're going to be in the Bronx at the they have a new performing arts center there that they recently reopened. So we're going to be there the day before Mother's Day.
They opened up an arts center in the Bronx?
Yeah.
Now that's progress.
That's progress. Because when we got booked, I said to the guy, do I need to have four guys come with me there? Get me in a place? Okay. Because I'm not walking the streets with a guitar. Okay.
That's funny. When my wife and I were dating, it must have been like 82, 83. There was and Tough Tony just died. Tough Tony. So you know where he's from. He just passed away. And he opened this Italian restaurant in Corona. And I had the little MG. And we get there and I pull up and we get out of the car and there's no parking lot. I park across the street and we get out and Marion says to me, aren't you going to close the car, put the alarm on or anything like that? I said, here? No, I don't have to worry about that. She goes, you should really lock it. Watch. So we go in, we're walking in the door and the guy's standing there like this. And I said, is that little white MG okay over there? Ain't nobody going to touch that car.
Oh, my God. That's great.
She said, how did you know? Tough Tony's not going to let anybody touch the car.
That's right. Let me tell you.
So we have one question. If everybody has a question, you could just put it in the chat. And I'll put it up there for Marianne.
Yes. I said, Jennifer, you know, I do have a John Maisano who was my father's brother's name was John, and he had a son named John. Their family were Johns. My family were Joes. Okay, that's how it works. Okay,
we were Luigi's.
But I don't know if he lives in Cliffside Park. I would love to know where that side of the family went to, because we really lost touch with them after everybody passed away, like the uncles. And so I don't really know where the rest of those cousins are. But if you can reach out to John Maisano and ask him about Joe's Taxi, then we are related, and let me know, and I'd be happy to get in touch with him.
That'd be a cool connection. I met a cousin in the weirdest way, and the families were connected for 50 years, and I didn't know about it.
Well, my one cousin from on this side of the family, it was funny, because, you know, my father was very strict, and my mother became a little more Americanized, you know. But my father had that whole thing, like we, as you know, there were three sisters and I was the youngest, and three girls. We were not allowed to date boys unless we were going to marry them.
my daughter wasn't allowed to. Now she doesn't care, but back then she wasn't allowed to do that either.
And that was like not an easy thing to do. You can't say to a boy, oh, we're going to go on a date where you have to marry me. Okay? What the hell is that shit, right? So I never forget my father. He would stand up there with his face and he'd go, eh, what do you want to do, huh? You want to be Bhutan, huh? You know, where daddy come from, there's a one a man, and that's it, okay? And that was it. So by the time it got to me, it got a little less stringent. You know, like I was able to get away with more. But I never forget when my cousins came over, all of them, you know, Tina, Pina, Angelina, you know, Joe, Joey, Giuseppe, and little Joey, okay? They all came over, and my cousin Angelina told me that she was promised. I said, promised? What the hell is promised? And she said, tell you what it means, okay? That means when you were born, young girl, your mother got your baby picture in Italy, and she walked down 25 friggin' flights of stairs in Calabria and knocked on somebody else's door with a baby boy. She got the baby boy's picture. She gave the woman your picture, and that was it. When you grew up, that's the guy you were going to marry, whether you liked it or not. It was a promised arranged marriage. So when my cousins came here then, and then they became a little more Americanized, and my one cousin, Tina, who was gorgeous, these are the sides that I don't know where they are. She became a hairdresser, and she was living in West New York at the time. And she kind of saw this hot Italian guy on a motorcycle, you know, named Pino or something. And she was madly in love with him. But you know what? As soon as Fortunato came over from Italy, that was it. She married. She had to marry.
Wow, that's something. Yeah, you don't think those things happen in these days.
And you know what? That's the only part of the Italian heritage that I wasn't fond of. Okay, but I'm glad it didn't have to work out, you know, in my end. But it was just so interesting to see that it was so important for her to follow what her mother and father said.
Yeah, well, you know, my uncle in Italy, when my grandparents came, they left the oldest son there in Italy, and he was raised by his grandparents, and my cousin was smart enough to interview him in Barese before he passed away, and he said that he had the eyes on my aunt, and even though neither family was wealthy, her family was a little bit above his. Mm-hmm. And her father didn't want, you know, you're not allowed. You can't. And he went into the army. This was before the war. This was probably like 38 or something like that.
Yeah.
And when he came back, things were getting a little tough. My great grandfather had a house at least, and he was allowed to marry her. But you know, she, you know, lucky for him, you know, she didn't get married. So yeah. We have another question. We have any recording studio stories?
Oh, let me see. I had fun recording. Well, back in the day.
So it is fun. Recording is fun.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, recording studios were more back in the day because right now I have a studio in my house.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, you don't have to. I mean, you know, I go into GarageBand and ProLogic and I have 78, you know, tracks in front of me. And I plug into whatever I need to, and I can make any sound, and it's just crazy. I mean, you don't need to hire drummers anymore. Sad but true. You know, it's still always nice to have that real drummer with you because they really anticipate, and electronics cannot anticipate.
Yeah, yeah, and they the fills are different and things like that. Yeah, I've done a couple of GarageBand things. My friends in. They're on Long Island and I'm in New Jersey, and we're able to collaborate that way, which is pretty neat. But you know, the studio is fun because it's an experience. It's besides just playing the music, it's also an experience.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we recorded back in the day at Tommy Boy Records, and at that time it was an all-girl band, and we did some really, I mean, we were like a rocking band. It wasn't like a, you know, a little prissy thing. We did rock. And it was, and we had so much fun in the studio because you just went on, and you were like in there for hours, and it just felt like a minute. You know, it didn't hours. It just felt like, you know, 10 seconds you were there, and you walked out with these heavy, thick, they were that thick tapes. Remember? Gigantic.
Yeah. Now they give you a little thumb drive.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You walk out with it. You don't even walk out with a CD anymore. They give you a thumb drive. Oh, we'll email it to you when we're done.
So what is it, Daniel? My grandmother was forced to marry because she went out to the movies with my grandfather. She was seen in public with him. Ah, see? Now here's somebody validating my story. It's true. So they saw her in public, and then it was like, okay, now that's it. You got to marry her.
You got to get married. Yeah, you have to get married.
Yeah.
And Dan's a drummer too, so he's going to wait for you when you get to Calabria.
When can we get you here in Calabria? Drummer. Oh, David, that would be great. Let me tell you, you have to join Letizia's page. It's Italy Rooting, right?
Yep, yeah.
And even Bob's page. And when I go, I will put it up there because I am so ready to, you know, perform over there, whether it's comedy and music. And, you know, it's everything I love. It's all my passions. And I would love to have a live drummer from Calabria playing with me. That would be the best.
And we had a lot of fun there in Montebello in Calabria. They had a folk band playing, and they were supposed to be in one town with us. And then everybody came. They all kind of jumped up, piled in cars. The other town wasn't that far away, but they all followed, and the band came and everything. And it's Gino Neri, and he has a little band, and he's sang this song. A mangia crapa, which is eat the goat, and he had us singing it. And I said, "Can you send me the music and the lyrics?" So he says, "Sure." So the music was easy; it's three chords, not a big deal. But the song is in Calabrian dialect, and it's like nothing I've ever seen in my life.
You know,
and try to work this out phonetically. I mean, I had to put it to rest for a little while because I have no idea what they're singing. I just know it's a funny song.
Right.
But he had us singing it, and it was just great fun. And then once they found out that I played guitar a little bit, that was a whole nother thing. They're sending me their music, I'm sending them their music.
Right.
Because music is, you know, it's universal. Yeah, and it's a whole nother thing. And you know, I said to Letizia, I said, well, it's so nice that, you know, the band. And she said, oh, they weren't supposed to come, but they were having so much fun that they decided to jump in their car and, you know, follow to the town. And this guy has such a beautiful voice. He sang this song to the Blessed Mother. And not that I'm a religious person or not, but we went into the church and they handed him a microphone. And he said, I don't need the microphone. And he just filled the whole church with a song. And you know, the churches over there are not like the churches over here.
Oh, look, our music guy. The one who married her sister's husband after she died. And you know what? That's what happens sometimes.
It happened a lot.
That's right.
And you know, and it happened in my family. My great uncle married his wife's sister, and they were cousins to boot. They were first cousins to begin with. So he married one first cousin. She passed away, and he married a sister, which was also the first cousin. That wasn't, I won't say regular, but it you know, in some of those places it happened. But they weren't from a small place. They were from, you know, outside of Naples. It wasn't a small little town. Well, there was nobody else to marry.
You know, in my story, in my stage play, Agita, it also involved a lot of things that happened to me that I saw growing up that affected me in a different way. And my dad was very notorious for having affairs on my mom. And you know, it kind of damaged my relationship with him as when I was younger, because I was always trying to protect my mother. And the thing is, generationally, those people never left each other. They never had filed for divorce. None of that happened.
Yeah, no.
You know, they just stayed. They stayed in the marriage. And it was funny because I'll never forget it. God rest his soul. When like years after my father passed, every year, I get a phone call from my mother, and she'd start with me. And it would be like my father's birthday. And she'd say, "Babe, did you go to your father's grave today?" And I go, "No, Mom, I'll call you back." And then she'd call my other sister, ask the same question, call my other sister, ask the same question. Then she'd call me back and she'd go, that friggin' Bhutana. She went over there and left flowers on your father's grave. And I was like, Ma, let it go. You think the Pisha deal is going to come out of the ground now? Stop. All right, please. Holy shit. Okay. Oh, what is this?
Well, you have to tell the radio story, the two-way radio story.
Oh my God, that was so. Like I said, that was, you know, that we moved up in technology as time went on, and we had CB radios in the house. We had three phones and a home phone, so it was like, that's why I'm the only person that could fall asleep to Goodfellas with gunshots and you son of a bitch, and you get, because I'm so used to all this chaos in my house, phones ringing. Taxi phones, parking lots, breaker 19, you know, that's how it was. So you had to like do white noise, you know? And now I told you my father fooled around. So I came home for lunch one day from school, and I'm sitting at the table eating with my mom. And I'll never forget what she made me. It was a tuna sandwich, cut on a diagonal, no crust, and a bowl of tomato soup. And we're sitting at the table, and all of a sudden we hear like noise on the CB radio, and I hear my mother go, babe, look what your stupid father did. He put his hat down on the microphone. Now we block the airwaves and nobody can get through. Jesus Christ. So now we hear music in the background. We hear him clearing his throat. We hear him coughing. And then all of a sudden we hear a horn. And we hear a door slam. And then we hear, hi, Joe. And now I'm like this with my sandwich. I don't know what the hell to do, right? And he goes, hey, how you doing? Ah, boy, you look so beautiful today, huh? And she goes, oh, Joe, stop. And Joe, you better stop giving me pastries at my door. I'm going to get fat. He goes, hey, come on. I know you. Huh? You got the beautiful figure. Huh? Now, I'm looking at my mother. I'm going, holy shit, what is good? Now, that's when I knew what agita was. That feeling when you throw up a little bit in the back of your mouth and it starts to burn. I'm like, holy shit. And then all of a sudden, he goes, okay, look, I'll pick you up later tonight, huh? And then all of a sudden, to add insult to injury, what do we hear?
Oh, boy.
Well, that was it. Then my mother blew. That son of a bitch! Now she's screaming, throwing pots, this and that. And my brother, he was in the cab. And they were all trying to find him to say, take your friggin' hat off you, because he had the thing on the... Oh, stop it! Lift it up! What are you doing? Nobody could find him. So my brother ran in the house to kind of see. Maybe my mother didn't have the CB radio on. But when he saw her, he knew it was too late. And as soon as my father walked in, my mother got all calm. Like nothing was wrong with her, you know? And she was like making like she was drying the dish. She's like, hi, Joe. Where were you? Where'd you go? And my father's got his coat, you know, his top hat on, and he goes, hey, I went to the store, you know, I thought I had a cigar. I don't know, more cigar. I had to go get the cigars. And she goes, this big and bastard, you're watching me, Joe. Who was she? And you know, it was so weird because he never denied it. But all he would do was say, hey, I'm not going to take it this shit. You people all bought, so let his hat and he'd go. And that would be, and then, you know, it was so funny. Every time she caught him, and she always did, she dragged me with her. Every time she caught him, they wouldn't talk. For 3 days, she wouldn't talk to him. And on the third day, this is what I heard all the time. Joe, come and eat. And for me, as a young kid watching this, I was like, did he ever say he was sorry? Why is she still cooking for him? What is this? What love is all about? What, like, it just perpetuated that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and then there's also the time where you made $40, right?
Oh yeah, it was so funny. I saw him. I was in my car, my checker, and I pull up to a traffic light, and I turn and I look, and there's my father in the car with the big blonde, and I'm like, right, so now the light changes, we both go in different directions, right? There I am, right? I get home and he's in the basement. Now he calls me, Mariana Veneca. I go downstairs and he goes, Mariana, you don't say nothing to mommy, you saw daddy today, huh? I'm like, no, pop, no, because you know, you don't want to get a mommy sick, like it would have been my fault then.
Yeah.
I go, no, I didn't say nothing. He goes, hey, come here, here, put a gas in the car, and he gives me $20, and I'm like, like Spanky Face, you know? So now I go upstairs and my mother calls me. Babe, what'd your father want? Nothing, Ma. Marianne, don't lie to me. He called you downstairs. What did he want? So I told her. She gave me $20. And I was up $40 and they were acting like the heads of the five families, screaming and yelling at each other.
So for everybody listening, these stories and much, much more are in Ajita. And so, you know, if you have the chance to watch that, how could people watch that, by the way? I haven't asked you.
Vimeo.com, and it's on demand there. And Vimeo is a service you don't have to pay for. You can sign up for free. And then once you go in and you put in Ajita on demand, you'll find it there. You click on that. And then you put in a credit card. It's under $5 to rent the play.
Yeah, and it's like I said, there's the story and there's a couple of the other stories and many, many more and some songs and lots of stuff. Unlike me, you sing very well and you play the guitar very well. I'm not good at either one, but it doesn't matter. It's just
thank you.
I force people to listen to me, so it doesn't matter.
If you'd like, I'll before we sign off, I'll do a little song that has nothing to do with being Italian, but I'll do it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It just happens to be my version of a classic song that I really love. Summer time in the living is easy. Fish all jumping, yeah. And the cotton is high. Your daddy's a rich, and your mama's good looking. Where? So hush, pretty baby, don't you cry. Thank you.
That was great. That was fun.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I have to invite you to my friend Rob's. He started this open mic thing on Facebook during the pandemic. Every once in a while, he puts something out there.
And he
has musicians from all over the world come and play. So might be something you want to try one time.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Marianne, this has been a lot of fun.
Yes.
And, we're not that far away. Sometime we'll have to try to figure out how to meet halfway and
totally, definitely.
Time restaurant or something like that. And we'll try and catch you live one of these days when you're in Jersey.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Stay in touch. Be well, okay?
You too. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.